prohibited. And we're basically trying to at least eliminate the artificial congregation of deer so that deer can't pass it deer to deer if there should be any in the wild at that point.
Okay. You, a few years ago, got a new deer plan in place. Kind of lay that out for us, how it's gone so far with the new deer plan and what the goals are.
Well, I don't have it before me, Kevin, so, and my memories would be a little foggy, but basically, you know, we're working with, you know, a deer advisory council on that. There are a number of goals that have basically told us how we're going to work with the deer in the various areas of the state. We want to be able to communicate well what we're trying to do with deer populations or our management. We had beginning to plan both spring and fall times where we have open houses. All of the wildlife areas we're having open houses, but that's another thing that COVID has kind of stopped for us. In lieu of that this year, we did have a webinar that people could sign up for and could participate in. And I think we probably had about 180 or so people at the webinar, I think, this year. That's something that I think we're going to have to investigate, and we'll have to see how COVID goes along. But we're trying to maintain a healthy population, a population that fits goal, a population that is useful for recreation, both hunting and otherwise in the state. And, you know, I would recommend that if people have greater interest in that, check out our DNR website. You can find the actual plan there and look at that. And if you have questions, give any of us at one of our wildlife offices or call me up at the region, and we can talk about it.
Well, in addition to deer, you are the wildlife manager. There's a lot more wildlife than deer in the woods, for certain. We, in fact, had a bear season. Is that still on? I don't even remember what the end date for that.
Oh, yeah. Bear season closed October 18th this year, and we had an outstanding bear season.
You did.
Over 3,100 bear have been taken, and I think, you know, it's a function to a degree of the natural foods that are in the woods. And this year there was somewhat an issue with acorns, and acorns are exceptionally important to bear as they fall, and the bear are trying to bulk up for the winter season. So a very good season for them, about 3,100 bear this year, or a little better than that. And that's probably, it's not a record, but it's certainly, you'd have to go back several years before you would have seen that bettered, I would say.
Okay. So obviously the population seem very healthy right now.
Seems pretty good, yeah.
Okay.
We're looking at somewhere around, you know, I don't know what the confidence interval, but probably 15,000 or thereabouts is what I've been last told.
Okay. All right. And we've had some waterfall seasons, duck seasons on, goose seasons on. How have those seasons been so far?
Well, you had to mention those, I suppose. I tell you, for my own health, I haven't had the ability to get out and take the duck hunts that I've needed. And, you know, this cold weather has really moved ducks along, I would say. We were doing just fine until it really hit, and a lot of our shallow wetlands froze up, and a lot of them are still froze. Places like Thief Lake and Roseau and some of those larger, you know, congregations area that have shallow waters and are popular waterfowl spots, they're basically shut down right now because it's all ice. I would say that waterfowl season, if you're a big lake hunter like Leech or places like that, our big waters are going to be open, and they probably are going to have the later ducks coming in, the divers and stuff like that, probably still have a few mallards around. And depending upon, you know, what the local goose population is doing, there might be a few geese around as well. Most of the places I've talked to north of here, north of Bemidji, have indicated that they had a lot of birds, and now they're gone largely because of freeze-up. So I think that the northern part of the region is probably seen its best days for duck hunting, and probably the southern part still has several good ones to offer, and I think the rest of the southern part of the state probably likewise as well.
Okay. What about the fall turkey hunt? What did you hear out there?
Well, fall turkey hunting is something that not a lot of people take advantage of. It's sort of a season that really doesn't get a lot of attention. The fall turkey season, runs, let's see, what is that date? I think it's October 3rd to November 1st this year, and you can take a turkey of either sex. You'd think, you know, with Thanksgiving come up, a person that would want to put a wild bird on the table would have a really good chance of doing so if they were so inclined. But we really just haven't seen that many people take advantage of it. I know deer hunting-wise, it's pretty common for you to see turkeys and enjoy them as they pass by your stand, but not too many people take advantage of it.
Okay. You know, kind of we were talking before we started recording here that it's just kind of been ironic in that we had the it gets so cold so quick, and that really hampered duck season, and now as we're getting ready for deer season, we might lose our tracking snow by the time it gets here.
Yeah, can you have it the way you want it, or not the way you want it, I guess you would say. But, yeah, it would have been nice to have had that nice snow that we had a week ago for opener. Most hunters would really appreciate that. I'm looking at my yard outside Bemidji here, and I would say it's about half snow-covered, and the grass is showing through the rest of it, and the leaves that I didn't rake this fall either because it was too early. But, you know, I think our weather forecast, you know, for these next few days are going to be in the 40s. I can't imagine this snow sticking around unless we have another front or two come through and drop some snow and keep the temperatures down. It's always good to have tracking snow on deer season. It's just more efficient for finding a deer and being able to deal with things. So,
before we wrap it up, in addition or besides chronic wasting disease, which obviously is a big concern, anything else statewide or in the Northwest region that has got a little bit of concern as far as the deer populations go?
We do have a few places in the north, the very far northeast part of the region, up in that Bedette and I Falls area. And you'll see this on the deer map if you have it. We changed deer permit area boundaries, in particular 105. And in that area there, we have that area along Highway 11 that is agricultural in nature. And there's a lot of deer up there. In fact, people talk about it's not a good place to drive at night, you know, because of the deer. But if you get a little further south of that, you get into the larger wooded areas of the state, the Beltrami Island State Forest and other lands like that. Up to this point, you know, we haven't been able to really fine-tune that area for harvest. This year, we changed the boundaries based upon the goal-setting process that we had back in January and February, and extended that along that agricultural zone, so we're capturing that. And we made that intensive, so a person can harvest up to 3 deer if they want to. Mm-hmm. Just further south of that is still in that lottery area. So that's the area where there's more forested areas of the state. Our deer populations are not nearly as robust, and we're trying to provide them a little bit of protection from that standpoint. So that's a change we've had there. If you go further to the northwest up in Kitson County, you'll find that permit area 263 and 260 also had the same type of boundary change, where we're trying to focus a little bit more on areas where there's higher deer populations, and the regulations really weren't available because of the deer permit area boundary to put the kind of pressure we need to keep the deer populations within goal. I don't see, Kevin, that there's any, so far, any disease problems other than that Douglas County area that we talked about as far as CWD. And I hope and pray that it stays that way. We don't need another positive in this state at all. Mm-hmm. And like you said earlier, this is our number one project for the section. So other than that, I don't know of any particular problems. You know, I'm looking for a good deer season. I think our hunters are going to be pleased. At least I hope so. And we'll see how the season wraps up.
When you're planning, or not really planning, but when you're looking at what it takes for a healthy deer population, what are some of the things we need as far as, you know, forested areas, woods, food availability? How do you, I don't know if there's a whole lot you can do, but what are some of those key things that help that deer population?
Well, you know, a good clue of that is if you pull out that deer permit map that we have that comes with the hunting synopsis. You look on the back side of that, and it shows you each of the deer permit areas and their various colors that indicate, you know, the harvest strategy in there. And you'll see that area that starts up from Kitson County and runs all the way towards the cities. And if you notice just southeast of that, or southwest of that, and south northeast of that, there's this band that goes right through kind of the center of the state. And you'll find that that's where all the intensive harvest and the managed areas are usually found. So it's that area of the natural agricultural and woods together that make the ideal deer hunting habitat. And, of course, you can have smaller areas of that, you know, and areas outside of that area, too, that would also serve that same purpose. But that ideal mix of forest and field and agriculture and marsh, that seems to be a combo that really works well. So those are the type of things that I guess, you know, if you just look at that map, it becomes apparent for what you would see for very good deer habitat.
You know, you mentioned something that I think is a real interesting earlier. You know, you are, I think by and large, most of us expect that we're trying to make good hunting habitat, good hunting experiences for people. But part of living in Minnesota is just having that family of deer that comes through your yard on a regular basis, or those ducks that you see on that pond as you're driving into work every day. Whether you hunt or not, good, strong populations of wildlife are really kind of part of life here.
It sure is. And, you know, Minnesota is blessed with some of the best wildlife in the country, you know. We even have elk to a small population in the Northwest, and maybe someday we'll have them elsewhere that might, maybe could be a recreational source. And like you say, it's not just hunting. It's the enjoyment of that. One of the biggest activities that people that aren't hunting enjoy is bird watching. And that's a very big activity. Right now, you know, I've got my bird feeder out, but I'm having this battle with the squirrels, and I'm about ready to find a white flag. They're winning pretty badly.
So, I hear that. You
know, that's a major thing that people like to do, feed birds and just observe them. And, gosh, you know, if we can find deer and ducks and grouse and pheasants to look at, it just makes the day brighter, in my opinion. And it's not just the game species. It's the hawks and the other species that we enjoy seeing on a common basis. Loons, you know, couldn't be anything more Minnesota than that, right?
Right, absolutely. Now, does all of that, non-game and game, does that all fall under your purview, John?
No, there was a time when non-game and end-game, if you want to call it that, were kind of one in our section, but they've actually split off. And ECO, basically, our ecological and water resources section, takes care of that. And we're specifically the wildlife portion of mainly wildlife species. But you know what? When we each manage our various ranges of what we do, We're benefiting game and non-game species, and that's a basic tenet of any land management, that we're doing good habitat management. And what's good for deer might be good for grouse. What's good for ducks might be good for loons. You know, you can just make the connection there that good habitat management is critical for good wildlife, just plain and simple.
It is all so interrelated. I think that's the thing I find fascinating from an outsider perspective who really doesn't know a whole lot about it. Every time I read up on it or hear about it and learn about the interconnectedness of the entire ecosystem, it's really amazing.
It really is. And, you know, while we know a lot today, we don't know everything there is to know about it by any shade of the imagination. If a person wanted to, they could probably go to a local library and pick up one of the journals of wildlife management, and you'd find things you'd never guess people are studying and finding out about. It's a fascinating field to be in.
All right, well, let's wrap it up here, John. Again, we're getting ready for the deer opener, firearm deer opener. It sounds like populations are strong. Maybe the weather doesn't cooperate, but it won't be for lack of deer if we don't have a great deer hunt this year.
I think that's true. You know, there's still some wild cards about the weather. Ice formation is one thing that can either be a problem or an asset, depending on how thick the ice is. Snow or not, you know, it's hard to say. But I think the deer are there, and if hunters will provide a little bit of planning ahead of time, I think they can ensure themselves of a good hunt.
All right. John Williams is the Northwest Regional Wildlife Manager, talking about the upcoming deer opener. John, as always, we enjoy talking to you and appreciate the insight. And when you get out there, good luck.
Thank you, Kevin. Hopefully we'll all have a little good luck this year.
Later on in the show, Mike Stitsworth joins us. But first, Bryce Volbrecht, DNR Conservation Officer. Rules to remember, safety tips too. That's next on Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors. This is Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors. Once again, pleased to have Bryce Volbrecht join us. He's the DNR Conservation Officer here in Paul Bunyan Country. We're getting ready for the opening of deer hunting, so some things to cover. And first of all, Bryce, I think the first thing I need to cover, based on what I'm, you know, experiencing temperature-wise, do they make blaze orange flip-flops and shorts?
They definitely might need that this weekend. It looks like it's supposed to cool down a little bit, but, you know, I'm not complaining one bit about the weather. I'm loving this stuff.
Oh, yeah, me too. I have no problems with it. But certainly from a deer hunting standpoint, we always like that tracking snow and things of that nature. That's obviously not going to happen this year.
Yep.
Is there an issue when we, you know, still have a lot of the color, or at least the brown and no white contrast? Is it tougher to be seen, you know, even with blaze when you're out in the woods?
I don't think so. I think as long as they have good bright blaze orange or blaze pink, it's fine. Maybe if you get into some of those blaze orange jackets that have been in the family for the last 20, 30 years, they're starting to fade a little bit. Then you might see some issues seeing that.
Okay.
But overall, if you get the bright new blaze orange, or take care of it, keep out of the sunlight when it's not hunting season, I think you'll be able to see that just fine.
So blaze pink, that's a fairly new phenomenon. How did that come about, and is that actually better? I think I've heard from some people they think it's better.
I don't know. I guess I've heard mixed results, too. I think you can see them both pretty well, and again, as long as they're not faded by the sun or other elements, they're both pretty good to see out there.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about rules and regulations and safety. First of all, let's talk safety. What is the biggest bonehead thing you see from hunters every year that they really need to avoid?
Just make sure your firearms are unloaded. We do get people that like to road hunt and don't intentionally unload them, but other people forget or get busy and forget. And I know in the past we have had instances where there's been firearms go off in the trucks. Be careful where you're leaning your gun when you're not hunting. If you're getting back to your truck, try to lay it down somewhere. Don't lean it up against the truck. That slippery metal, it's pretty easy for that gun to slide down and then forget about it or bang and knock your scope out of sight. So just being careful where you're placing your gun, making sure it's unloaded before it's in the vehicle. And then one of the other biggest things is knowing what your target is and what's beyond that. You know, we don't want any rifle rounds flying where they shouldn't be, or things being shot that shouldn't be shot.
Okay. You know, there's a lot of people who own property, you know, right next to state land. And I think it's very key to be very careful if you're hunting on state land to know exactly where you're at, right?
Yeah, get out there early and scout the area out. Make sure you know what's around you for buildings. Maybe somebody built this year that then there's a house or a shed of some type that wasn't there last year. If you hear noise in the woods when you're out hunting this weekend, make sure you can identify that as a deer. With this beautiful weather we've been having, there's been a large amount of people out in the woods and on the trails walking that typically wouldn't be out there if we were having colder weather. So keep that in mind. A lot of people are still out grouse hunting and watch your dogs and that type of stuff.
Okay. Is it incumbent upon landowners to put signs up at the border of their property or not?
Yeah, so Minnesota, agricultural land does not have to be posted, and you can still not go on that. And ag land can be anything from plowed up grain fields to a hay field to fenced in pasture and stuff like that. Other areas, wooded areas or non-agricultural, has to be posted, and the posted signs have to be signed by the landowner with your name and phone number, also signature on there. And then they need to be posted at the corners of the property and any entrances into the property, or every 1,000 feet in open areas, or 500 feet in wooded or thicker brushy areas.
Okay, got it. So that's some of the base things we need to know. I think the other thing, obviously, and you know, people who've hunted for, you know, a family tradition probably know this stuff inside and out, but some people are new. And I know this year I hear license sales are up, so we might have some new rookies out there. You got to be very careful, and you got to check the books and understand what zone you're in. There's a lot of zones in our region, in our area, and they all have their own set of rules, right?
Yep, as far as what they can take in those zones, yep.
So you buy a license for a specific zone, you got to be aware of what it's in. Some can be, you know, either a buck or a doe. Some are buck only. Some, I think there's even some that might be more than one tag available. There's all kinds of things depending on where you're hunting.
Yes, and the easiest thing to do is go to any place where they sell licenses, and even a lot of gas stations that don't sell licenses. They have the regulations books. Make sure you get a 2020 regulation book, not a holdover from 2019. And in the middle of that, there's a nice fold-out colored map that pretty clearly shows what you can take for deer and in what zone. And that's by far the easiest way to go about it.
And obviously that's something you need to study and be up on too, I imagine.
Yep, we take a look at that. And through our travels, get into different zones, I always have that handy. So if I need to check something, I have it in my door. I can just pull it out really quick and look over things.
Okay. Now, I also know there's some regulations as to when you can start hunting each day and when you have to be done hunting each day. What are the rules there?
Yep. So the actual time every day is going to change. And through our, we have a 16-day season up here. It's going to change about 2 minutes a day. It's a half hour before sunrise. And then the season goes till half hour after sunrise. So, again, the regulations book has a sunrise, sunset chart in it. A lot of people's smartphones now can just look it up on there. But make sure you're checking that every day. It's going to be changed in a minute to 2 minutes every day throughout the season.
Okay. So what is it that you find yourself doing as a conservation officer during deer hunting season?
It kind of just depends. A lot depends on the weather to see if people are going to sit longer. If it's really cold and crummy out, we get a lot more road hunting and shooting from the road, trespass complaints. So a lot depends on that and what comes in for calls, but I like to get out and visit with people, stop at deer camps and see how they're doing or if they're having issues with other people in the area. So I get out and make a lot of contact with different people in the area over the season. And then it all depends on what comes in for calls or complaints throughout the season.
Right. And if you witness something that you want to report, tip line's probably the best way to go, right?
Yep. That's the easiest. That's available 24 hours a day. And then they'll get it out to one of us in the field.
Okay. About how many complaints do you have to respond to a year during deer hunting season?
It just all, again, depends on the season. It's some seasons we can go from getting very few to no calls to you're running constantly. And I don't know what does it, but it just depends on the people. And like you said, there's a lot of licenses being sold this year. I don't know the exact numbers, but I've heard it's up significantly. So there'll probably be a lot of new people out in the woods, and chances are we'll probably get calls for stuff.
Well, yeah, just because of new people and also people spending more time probably hunting this year because, like we noted, it's going to be a lot more comfortable.
Yep. Yeah, at least that first weekend and first part of the season. I don't know what the extended 15-day outlook is looking like right now, but the first part of the season should be pretty nice.
Okay. Anything else you want to make sure we know about as we get ready for the weekend?
I don't think so. Just be careful out there. Again, identify what you're shooting at and what's beyond that target. If there's any question as to whether it's private or public land, get a plot book. Look on Onyx Hunt Maps. There's other hunting apps on your phone that'll show you who the property owner is. Be careful of some of the information you're getting on the hunting apps. Like the Onyx Hunt Map, for example, doesn't show where the Bemidji Game Refuge is, and shows that that's closed, or the Schoolcraft Refuge south of town. Those areas are both closed to rifle hunting. So just keep that in mind. We got a lot of complaints of that last year. People rifle hunting on the refuge, which is typically not open to gun hunting. So the archery hunters are getting surprises in their stands when they hear gunshots fairly close to them.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, people think it's public land, but it really isn't public land. I think it's owned by specific organizations, correct?
The refuges?
Yeah.
So the Bemidji, yeah, it's kind of a combination of everything. On the Bemidji Game Refuge, there's state land, there's county land, which would be tax forfeited land, and then there's private land. So, and then some of it, even in the city limits of Bemidji.
All right. Again, you can start hunting a half hour before sunset this upcoming Saturday morning. It's a 16-day season. Bryce Fulbrecht is one of the conservation officers here in Paul Bunyan Country. It'll be a busy time for him. Before we wrap it up, Bryce, I'm going to shift over to fishing. I got to think with this weather that we're back to seeing a lot of boats on the water, or will be probably in the next week or two.
Yeah, actually this week it's been fairly busy with fishing. I think a lot of people there were winterizing their boats and getting things put away when the shoreline started to ice up, but now they're all starting to get them back out. Might as well take advantage of this nice weather, and the fishing has been fairly decent.
Yeah. Yeah, it has been, and obviously, it's just a beautiful day to be in a boat. It's almost like summertime again. It's hard to believe.
Pretty close, yeah. It's beautiful outside today.
Bryce, thank you for your time today, and stay safe yourself when you're out there this weekend and for the entire season.
All right, thank you. Have a good day.
Well, you've shot your deer. Now what? Mike Stitsworth of Stitsworth Meat joins us next to talk about how to get that deer from the woods to processing, keeping it as clean and as fresh as possible. And we'll talk recipes, too. It's all coming up next on a deer hunting edition of Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors. Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors, it's practically a state holiday. It's bigger than a lot of state holidays, really. It's opening deer hunting, and that's the focus of today's show. Now, you've got your deer. How do we keep that deer fresh? How do we prepare it when we get it home? We're talking with the master, Mike Stitsworth of Stitsworth Meats. Like most meat shops in northern Minnesota, you guys have a lot of experience processing deer, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, we do anywhere from 500 to 600 on the last few years, other than, you know, sometimes it dips down to around the 300 to 400 range. But, yeah, we do quite a few deer.
How about you? Are you a deer hunter?
I am when I can, when I'm not cutting other people's deer up. I like it. I don't get to do it a lot.
Right. It's certainly one of those northern Minnesota traditions, of course, and it's a lot of fun. And there's a lot of things that go into it. We spend a lot of money on ammo. We spend a lot of money on guns. We spend a lot of money on clothes to keep us warm, although, you know, shorts and flip-flops this year is probably what we're going to need. All those things we spend money on. So when it comes down to actually getting the deer, we want to make sure, Mike, that we have something good to eat. And that's why we're bringing you in today to give us a guide on what we should do. So let's just start. We've got the deer. We shot the deer. We found the deer. We're going to drag it out of the woods. What do we do to make sure we have a good tasting cut of venison or several cuts of venison once we're done with this whole process?
Well, a lot of times when you get your deer, you're going to want to field dress it like fast as possible, because a lot of times when you shoot a deer, it actually heats up, especially it's looking like it's going to be a fairly warm deer season now. But you're going to want to field dress it as soon as possible so you can start cooling that deer off so the chest cavity's open with some air coming through it. A lot of people, you know, that when you drag it out of the woods, either get it onto something like the back of a four-wheeler rack or a side-by-side if you can. If you can't, drag it head first out of the woods if you can. That way you're not getting dirt into the chest cavity or between the legs. That's going to cut down on your yield on what you get back with your deer. You're going to have a lot of waste because we're going to have to trim off all the dirt. We don't wash your deer off, we trim it off, which is something that's standard in USDA. When you're processing beef and hogs, you trim off the contaminants versus washing it, because all you're doing is possibly spreading around the E. coli that could be in there. And, you know, make sure that you, you want to make sure you get all the parts out. You know, a lot of, I would say 50% lately have left the hind end in there. So that's that contains E. coli. You want to get that out of there, and then yeah, keep it as clean as possible. You know, if you do a good job field dressing it, and if you're conscious about how you drag it out of the woods, you really don't need to wash it out. Washing it out is something that I don't really care for when it comes in. Some people think they have to wash it out and hides full of water, and it drips, that dirty water drips into the meat when you're skinning it. So if you could just keep it as clean as possible while you're taking it out of the woods, so there's no need for any kind of washing or excess trimming, that's huge.
Okay. And when you say field dressing, I mean, it's right there in the middle of the woods. Get as much of that stuff out of there as possible before you even move the deer, correct?
Right. Yep. If you can't, you know, some people have to move it to a better location to do it. But, yeah, usually you want to do that right away.
Now, veteran hunters know how to do a lot of this stuff, but, you know, maybe guys that are new to this, or maybe somebody's just never really learned much. They learned it from grandpa, and maybe they're not doing it quite right. Is there I'm presuming, like everything else, there's ways to find on the internet how to do this stuff.
Oh yeah, there's probably thousands of YouTube videos. And if you're not 100%, don't be scared to ask somebody. I mean, just make sure you get it right, because it makes our life easier, and it makes you get more back for your money. Just, you know, you think about all the ammo and everything that you spend on deer hunting. Well, anything you do the right way, the correct way, is going to decrease the cost per pound that you got into that meat.
Now, yeah, that's all a very good point. Now, we've got the field dressing, as we noted, and you'd get it to camp. I'm assuming the sooner it gets into Stitsworth's or wherever you might be taking that to finish it off, the better, correct?
Yep. And this year, we actually have two wild game trailers. One is just pure cold storage, and the other one we work in. We do all the processing in. That way it keeps the wild game from cross-contaminating with our retail meat. Okay. But yeah, get it in there as soon as possible. We're open from 8 to 6, and we don't accept deer after hours, which is fine, because once it gets dark this time of year, it's always cool enough. It just needs to be below 40. If it's kind of dire straits, buy a 20-pound bag of ice and throw it in the chest cavity, and then it'll be fine till the next morning.
Did you say you don't accept deer, or you don't accept beer after dark?
We accept beer, but not deer.
Okay, got it. All right,
we always accept beer.
So those who are spending the weekend, you know, miles away in the family camp, what do you do if you're not going to be able to get there for a day or two? Yeah, you noted ice for one thing. I assume that's probably the best option.
Yeah, if you can get it hung up in a shaded area out of the sun, hang them by the Achilles tendons. So you just cut a hole in the hind leg where the Achilles is. Just cut a hole between the leg and the Achilles. Don't cut the Achilles, otherwise it'll just fall down. But hang it up in a shaded area, and that's going to be enough to keep it cool. And if it, like right now, it's not going to stay over 70 at night. But if it gets below 40 all night, you're going to be okay if you keep it in the shade for a couple days.
When we bring it into you or to a butcher of some sort, is there pretty much a standard way of cutting it up, or do you take special orders? How does all that work?
Yep. So we always guarantee everybody gets their own meat back at Stitsworth. Apparently, it's not the most common practice for whatever reason. For us, it's easier to keep everybody separate. But when you drop it off, we'll talk to you about what you want. And your standard cut is you get the steaks, you know, out of your better steak meats and hind quarter, out of the hindquarters. So you get your steaks and then your chops out of the back straps, and then roast out of, you know, like a couple of the muscles in the hindquarter. You do a couple of roasts. So you do steaks, chops, roasts, and then grind the rest of the trim and wrap it 1-pounders burger. That's your basic cut. That's kind of when somebody doesn't know what to ask for. That's usually what I tell them is steaks, chops, roasts, and grind the burger. You get a lot of people that don't really care for venison unless it's mixed with something. The burger, I always recommend like a third 80-20 lean beef added in, which we have as well. I always recommend it because it stretches out your venison further, so you get more, you know, you get more meat, lasts you longer through the year. Then you get the people that all they want is a sausage, and what we do there is we just say bag all the trim, because we don't actually take venison orders until close to, you know, after Christmas time. That way our coolers, our freezers aren't full, or don't get too full too quickly for, you know, all the regular cut deer.
Okay.
But, and then if you want to make your own jerky or anything else, you say, hey, save some meat for jerky, and we'll take the best cuts and bag those up. We'll slice them up for you and make them into jerky. So it's really in what you want, but yeah, the standard cut is steaks, chops, roasts, and grind the trim in the burger.
Are there a lot of people that do their own cutting up that are well-versed in that, or do most people go to a guy like you?
Oh, I don't know what the stats would be. I bet you there is a lot of people. We do get a lot of people that start on their deer and decide they don't have enough time, or they really don't know what they're doing. So we get some that people started into it and, you know, punted, bring it in. So, yeah, I think there is a lot, but it's getting fewer and fewer. You know, so I think people are, you know, for $100, I think they'd rather just drop it off, let us deal with it, and go back out hunting.
Sure.
You know, it's not as big of an issue on getting it cut up, especially when you talk about, you know, everything else you got into the whole experience. That's probably the cheapest part in the grand scheme of things.
For those who do like to do their own thing and have given it a try, what seems to be the biggest mistake people make?
When they do their own?
Yeah.
Just breaking it down. A lot of people kind of make it a little harder than it really is when you break it down. You know, the easiest way to break it down, if you just open up the hind quarter and you go through the hip socket, detach the hind quarter, take the back strap off or the loin and the front shoulder off, and then on the inside you have the tenderloin. On the inside of the spine, you take the tenderloins out, and that's where you'd start. You know, even if people say quarter to deer, well, literally, you don't quarter a deer by sawing it through the middle all the way down. You don't have to use a saw at all, actually. You just use your knife and you do it, you know, the way I just said, breaking down a deer. That's going to be the best way to do it. It's going to save you a ton of time and hassle. And then when you have your hind quarter and your front quarter off, you just bone them out. So a lot of times people think they have to take a sawzall or a bow saw or something like that and start sawing through it and cutting it in half first. That actually causes you more time than just breaking it down without a saw.
Okay. Now let's talk about preparation for eating for a little bit, because you know, you've got a freezer full of deer, and that's going to be a lot of frustrating meals if you don't know how to cook it right. And the one thing we hear about venison all the time, it's dry, it's too dry. Obviously, they're very lean animals. They don't have the fat that some of the other, you know, like steak does or things like that. So how do we battle that?
You know, I kind of, you know, some people enjoy the venison taste. I don't mind it, but I'd rather have it in a roast or like as a, in a stew or something like that. So like the back straps, I leave, I'll separate it in like thirds. So you have three nice roasts and I'll cook them as a roast. So it stays more moist, versus just venison chops. My personal preference. I'll take, I like jerky and actually, you know, my dad and I and some other people in the shop, out of about anything, wild rice and cheddar summer sausage out of venison probably tastes better than normal summer sausage.
Really?
For whatever reason. Just the whole combination of the pork and the wild rice and cheddar and the venison in there has a good texture, and we all actually like it better than our normal summer sausage for whatever reason. But yeah, I like to cook things in bigger pieces to keep it more moist, or I'll stew it up and make a venison stew, which I really like, because you get the flavor of the potatoes and onions and everything else in there.
That sounds good.
Kind of my personal opinion. I mean, everybody kind of asks, not everybody, but a lot of different ways to cut a deer up. You know, people ask for all kinds of different things. So
when you're preparing it, and this goes for any, you know, anytime you're grilling or, you know, baking or whatever you're doing to a piece of meat, you got to be very careful to not overcook it. That's what makes it dry. And you obviously don't want to undercook it either. So, you know, is there a certain temp venison needs to be at to be that at as moist as possible?
Yeah, 145. You don't have to worry about cooking venison all the way through. It's a wild animal, and it's not like it's subject to certain diseases like hogs used to be. But even with pork, they don't have to get it all the way up to 160 anymore. That was kind of the old school method of cooking. You know, you had to cook everything well done to make sure it's safe to eat. You know, it's not totally like that anymore. So I cook it between 141 and 145 and 150, somewhere in there. That way it has a lot of its moisture in it. You know,
sure.
you're using the moisture for the flavor versus having fat marbling like beef and pork would have.
Gotcha. Mike, when people
order bacon wrap it.
You know, you can never go wrong with bacon wrapping anything, really. That sounds really good. So if people are going out hunting and they plan on using you, do you like to get a word ahead of time saying, hey, we're going out deer hunting this week and we'll hopefully be in with a bunch of deer later on, or do they just show up?
No, just show up in the hours and we're ready for you. The phone's already ringing off the hook, so yeah, there's somebody back there all day, every day during deer season waiting for people to come in. So yeah, just show up with it, drop it off. And if you're not 100% confident in your skinning skills, we prefer you just to leave it hide on.
Okay.
I know you want to save a couple bucks taking the hide off, but you're going to lose a lot of meat if you're not the best at skinning a deer.
Okay, so field dress it immediately. Make sure you keep the meat clean. Don't wash it. Those are three things that you mentioned at the top that as people are getting it to your place that you really want to make sure they do, right?
Great.
Okay. Michael Stitsworth from Stitsworth Meats giving us some tips on how to make sure we get the best tasting venison we can get from the time we shoot the deer to the time we get it to the butcher. Mike, thank you for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That'll do it for Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors Deer Hunting Edition. It's been sponsored by Clearbrook Electric, DS Beverages, your Anheuser-Busch distributor in Paul Bunyan Country, Ace on the Lake on Lake Bemidji's South Shore, Timberline Sports and Convenience in Black Duck, Pepsi and I Bottling of Bemidji, and Bonded Lock and Key, your home for Liberty Safes. Ladies and gentlemen, good luck this weekend. Have fun. Be safe.